I've got good news, bad news, and a confession. Which one do you want first? The confession. Of course you do. So, actually, they're all the same thing. No, I'm kidding. The confession was I spent all week sort of preparing a sermon illustration, and I was sitting there working on it, and I had it all set up, and by the way, I've got a big piece of Visqueen I was all ready to put in here and make a mess and all this stuff. But what I had was a sermon illustration in search of a text, not a text in search of a sermon illustration. And so I spent about half my week getting ready to repot plants in front of you and all sorts of things. But it's not in the text. And just as Sophie exampled how to live, how to let the Bible go into you, I want to actually preach that. And so, you know, none of you have ever spun your wheels anywhere, but that's my confession. I spun my wheels a little bit this week working on something that's not here. So, the good news is in the text here this morning, and we'll get to that, and the bad news is kind of in here too, but maybe what you think is bad news will be good news, and maybe what you think is good news will be bad news. You'll be the determination of that. So here it is, and I have a little frog in my throat this morning, so I don't really want to cough into the mic, because that's not awesome. So we are in Revelation 21 this morning, and for those of you who are keeping track, this single piece of paper is the end of my text. That's how close we are to the end of the Bible study on Revelation. Some of you think it's been going on for centuries. It's not. It's just been some of this year. But here we are in Revelation 20, verses 11 through 15. And I had one comment from over at the assembly. When somebody mentions a Bible verse, they're used to turning to it and waiting and having them wait. And I didn't wait for them to get there. So they said, "You didn't wait." Here I go. I'm going to talk through a little bit of this as we go. "And I saw a great white throne." I have to stop right there for a second and have a little excursus or a little time to explain that this is the seventh time in the book of Revelation that the throne has been mentioned. The seventh time. It's a funny number, right? Within the scripture, when you see something seven times specifically in the book of Revelation, it starts to mean something. But you should know that the throne dominates this book in such a way. It's a central theme to this. So because of that, there's seven of them, just like there's seven plagues and seven bowls and seven churches and seven and seven and sevens. The first time the throne shows up is Revelation 4. "Behold, I saw a door opened in heaven, and I saw a throne and one on it like a lamb." Like a lamb, not actually a lamb as it would say, but a lion. The point was, the throne of the universe is not vacant. That's an interesting point. Do you know what it means that the throne is not vacant in my life? It means that there's a standard that is not set by me. And the job opportunity to be Lord of the universe is not open, right? They're not having interviews. I would really like to be interviewed for that, but I would do it wrong, so I'm glad it's not open. It's sort of like the retreat system that we just hosted here, that they have a lay director on the thing, but I think it's almost important to always tell the lay director there's really only two positions on the train that you're directing. One is in the caboose, and one is on the cow catcher of the train. Because the conductor position is not open. That's Jesus. And so if you try to do the conductor job, you end up on the cow catcher. I've seen it happen. If you let him do the job, then you end up riding along comfortably in the passenger cabins and being served and serving as well. The second time the throne shows up is Revelation 7. Before the throne is an uncountable group of people from every tribe and every nation, too many to number. So if the throne is not empty, the thing we notice in the second one is this. There's not a finite number of people that are coming to faith, and once you get to that special number, it's over and the store's closed. It's an uncountable number. I know they threw out that number, 144,000, throughout the thing, but 144, we've done this symbology over and over again. I'm going to do it again right here. 12 tribes of the original Israel, which, by the way, if you split it up right, is 13. Right? Remember the half tribe of Manasseh and the other half tribe of Manasseh? 13. And then the 12 apostles, which isn't actually 12 at the time, because one of them was ended himself. But there's 12 times 12, so that is the whole church. It's an image that means the whole church. When you start adding zeros, you start magnifying how big the number is and how important it is. So 144 would be the church apostles times the tribes, and then you add a zero times 100 times 100, and you get to 144,000. You got too many to count. So the second time the throne shows up, this is good news. There's not a first come, first serve sort of number on the church of God, the people of God. The second time, or the third time, the throne shows up in Revelation is in Revelation 8. I want you to recognize this one thing for the mercy that it is. There is silence in heaven for 20 minutes while the prayers of the saints are heard. You think, God's listening. Did you know that? The throne of the universe is listening to the prayers of his people. That's some pretty good news. Did you think that maybe down here on earth, you know, there are so many of us, and, you know, sometimes we start to think that we're either super significant, like we should be on the throne of the universe, or we go the other way where we say, you know, I'm not actually significant enough to count. God's listening. The throne of the universe is occupied. There's not a finite number, and God is listening. The fourth time the throne shows up, it's the 24 thrones around the throne. All this. So what do we have? We have a throne of the universe occupied. We've got an uncountable number. You're significant and God's listening. And the kingdom of heaven is starting to take over the kingdom of the earth. That's also good news. Some people don't think of it as good news because they have all these pictures of crusaders and all that stuff going on in their mind, and I'm in the Lord's army now. Triumphalism, Christianity, right? We're doing this, and then people view Christianity through that. But that is not the picture of Christianity that the Bible puts forward. The picture of Christianity is a Lord who gives himself on the cross for his people. And then a group of people that start to understand and he takes up residence in them and they start doing that. We get the name Christian from that, or little Christos, or little Christs. In other words, people in the ancient Roman world that believed in Jesus would go out to the dumps and pick up children that had been left to die because they weren't the right kid or there's something wrong. Right, people that gave so deeply of themselves that the Roman world, well, they're just little Christs. That's the way Christians got to be known. That's what it means when earth's kingdom is incorporated, not just overcome, but incorporated and changed and born into this. The fifth time the throne shows up is Revelation 16 through 19. It's a three chapter one. The sixth one is at the end of this. The wrath of God is spent, but it is spent and highlighted around one phrase. It is finished. It is finished. Now, the book of Revelation is not the first place it is finished is used. It's the second place, and it's used specifically about the wrath of God is poured out. Where's the wrath of God poured out? Where it is finished is spoken earlier? At the cross, the actual cross. Jesus died on the cross, and he says, it's finished. But before he went to the cross, he said, if it's possible, could this cup of wrath be turned from me? But not in my will, but in yours. And so the fifth time we see the throne, it draws specific allusion back to the cross. This is good news. You think the wrath of God is coming, or people preach the wrath of God, and man, I don't want to be a brimstone preacher. And this text is often used this way. This white throne judgment is used this way. But I got to tell you, the wrath of God has been poured out. It's not coming. It's already come and been handled. Can I just, if you're willing, just go, whew. Right? All the popular literature that talks about the wrath of God coming, just go, whew. I don't have to face that. I don't have to worry about that. One commentary says if you're worried about a text in here, because the text says if your name's not written in the Lamb's Book of Life, you get tossed in the lake of fire. One commentary literally says if you're worried about that, you should consider your name in the book. Because people that aren't written in the book don't really care. That's what he says. Anyway, the sixth part of time the throne shows up is at the end of 19, when the people of God are transformed into the bride for the wedding feast. That's the role of the church, to join God in his life in a picture of marriage between us and God, where our marriages, as they could be, are imaged. How many of you have been blessed by a marriage in your life? I'm going to say that. I mean, all of you know Karen. I've been blessed by that. But that marriage, no matter how wonderful it is not completely what it could be. The image is in the bride of Christ in the wedding feast. And then this is the seventh judgment seat or throne setting in here. And here's the one. It does this. And the one sitting on it, I saw a great white throne and the one sitting on it. Now, it doesn't actually say the Father, which if you wanted to, this is point two of the sermon. The one on the throne, Paul says repeatedly, is the Father. Our society sort of shows a judgment seat with a gray grizzled beard, right? Sort of an anti-Santa Claus judgment. And I left my bony finger of indignation over in my office this morning. But most of us view this great white throne with the Father image and the bony finger. You. So Paul says it's God that's on the throne in Romans 14 and 2 Corinthians 5, and in Acts 17, it's talked about that. That's the Athens text in Acts. But in Acts chapter 9, I need to say something. In Acts chapter 9, Paul is on his way to Damascus, and something happens to him, and he's struck sort of blind by God interrupting his life. By the way, if God interrupts your life, you should expect it to have some profound effect on you. He got interrupted, and he says, Saul, Saul, from the Shekinah glory of the Old Testament and all this stuff is, why are you persecuting? And he says, why, who are you, Lord? Being a good Jew, he recognized that the Shekinah glory means that's Yahweh, the Lord of the universe, talking to him. Who are you, Lord, that I'm persecuting you? And out of the voice says, I'm Jesus. In Matthew 25:3, Jesus actually says, when I come into my glory, I will be sitting on the throne judging. Who's on the throne? Who's on the throne of the universe? Is it God the Father with the bony finger of indignation or Jesus? It's yes. And they're Jesus. They're not the bony finger of indignation because the wrath has already been poured out. The judgment has been set. Now comes the fire and brimstone. Are you ready? The earth and the sky fled from his presence, but they found no place to hide. By the way, some of you are fairly used to this text in 2 Peter 3, verse 10. It says, the Lord will come unexpectedly as a thief, and the heavens will pass away with a terrible noise, and the very elements themselves will disappear in fire, and the earth and everything in it will be found to deserve judgment. That's what this is. It's an image, but which one's first? You know, because the Bible's, the way you interpret Bible is you go back to the oldest version of something where it first appears, but you know, the Bible's not chronological. It would be really helpful if it was chronological, but it's not. So is 2 Peter written before the book of Revelation or the Revelation written? We don't know. So they interpret each other. That's the hermeneutical understanding. That's a $5 word. How many people of you like it when I use a $5 word? I see a couple little hands. $5 words, by the way, I say this often. I've spent a lot of money on my vocabulary, and I would like to use it every once in a while. Hermeneutical understanding is a really fancy German word that means framework of understanding. It's a hermeneutic. You understand things this way. But when we do the Bible, if you want to have a biblical understanding of any text in the Bible, you have to include all the texts on the topic. And they all have to inform you. You can't throw one away because it doesn't agree. And the truly biblical understanding is you go back to the first one and it sets the tone of the discussion. Well, if you can't tell which one's first, then they just have to inform on each other. And you don't get to pick. The one thing I will tell you is that from the 2 Peter language, the Greek words in there are really from metallurgy, and the image is much more as dross is removed by heat than actually heaven and earth passing away with a terrible noise. It's not a very good translation. This one's pretty cool. The earth and the sky fled from his presence, but they found no place to hide. Do you realize that when the judgment seat, when you come to the throne, if you're comparing yourself, if you begin to think, wow, if I have to look at the holiness of God, I might want to escape that moment because I might start to compare myself and think, well, I'm better than Bob, but I'm less nice than Susie. And of course, where do I put God on that scale? Some of you have heard me joke about it. You've met my wife. She's very nice. And I say, yes, she's the nice one. And you go, but you're nice. I said, I didn't say I wasn't nice. She's nicer. There's a right in the sliding scale. But where do you put God on your sliding scale of good and bad? And how do you then compare? You might try to hide yourself, but there's no place to hide. By the way, that's John 3:17-21. If you're wondering what I believe about how God interacts with the world, just go to John 3:16 through the end of John 3. It's enough. But here it is. They could not hide, and I saw the dead, both great and small. I want to talk to you about that. Great and small. Look, when it comes to this place, you're not going to buy your way out of judgment. It doesn't matter how wealthy you are or how important you might feel, you're not going to buy your way out of judgment. The flip side is, here's kind of the bad news, no one is so insignificant that they aren't going to be included in this moment. Look, at the cross, all of us are equal. All of us are equal. We all come on our knees or not at all. So the great and the small, there's no designation here. Everybody's included. And books were opened, including the book of life. Books. This is from Daniel chapter 7, the books. And the and look, I've got this thing. I didn't just spin my wheels coming up with bad sermon illustrations that weren't going to be helpful. Look, here's 100 references. This is 100 verses that sort of deal with the book of life, either obscurely or tangentially throughout the Bible. It's not a small topic, except for this one thing. There are other books, and it's mentioned in these two verses specifically. This is Daniel. At that time shall rise Michael, the great prince, who charged in charge of the people, and there should be a time of trouble, blah, blah, blah. It keeps going. And everyone whose name was found written in their book shall be delivered. There's that one. And then in Malachi, a book of remembrance was written before him of those who feared the Lord and esteemed his name. There's five major Old Testament verses on the book of life. There's also this understanding throughout the Old Testament, and it's in here, that there's a book. But there's a book about your life. Back to the no one too insignificant. Did you know that everything you've done has been written down? And all the context is written down? You're not so insignificant that heaven isn't noticing you. And you're not so important that your book is bigger than it ought to be. I just need to make sure this is kind of the bad news. You know what the good news about this is? That book isn't about your neighbor and how they've been bad, and you're next to them, so you think, man, it's a bad part of town. I live in a bad part of town. Everybody from bad part of town is judged unfairly, or my great uncle or my parents did this evil thing, and I pay this price in my community. Look, we live in a small town, right? Sometimes people are judged by their parents. Not here. You are completely in charge of you. That's good news and kind of bad news. Right? You're actually in charge of me. I don't know if I've told you the story. I spent about 13 years in an argument with my dad that he didn't know he was in. From about 15 to about 28, right? That's about where that happens. And you need to, you've only met him a little bit, some of you. He and I are a lot alike. And kids that are like their parents usually fight with them. Mainly because as a youth worker from later on in life, I understood this. Look, most teen rebellion is about self-differentiation. They're just trying to find out who they're going to be. And they don't want that sort of imported upon them. Well, I ran a business in the Tri-Cities, and I did all this stuff, and we come back to this retreat system that we worked in that changed my life early on. But the first time I worked a walk, I got asked to be a backup speaker by somebody specifically. The last time I'd seen him was about 15 years earlier, not very nice to his daughter. So have you ever been in a spot where you get asked to do something fabulous by somebody that the last time you did something was not good to them? I asked him about it, and he goes, well, you're Bill's kid. You're going to be okay. I don't get judged by that in these books. But every so often, it's a pretty good place to be judged by your ancestors or somebody like that, or your parents or your grandparents. But sometimes in small towns, it doesn't go that way. By the way, I keep getting told that Colville is a small town. Don't forget, I pastored for 6 years in a town one-tenth the size. And if you think this is a small town, it is not. And if you think everything is your business, is everybody's business here in Colville, it is not that way. Talk about being public property in a town of 500, or the neighboring one, which was 387. And everybody was all up in everybody's business. because, you know, we all had an opinion. This is not the way the book is. Look, it is a grace and a blessing to not be held responsible for somebody else's behavior. And kind of a difficult spot, isn't it? Everybody gets to have what they want come out of their mouth and to be represented by it. That's a hard spot. By the way, their behavior and what they've done to you is not to be, or near you, or in the vicinity of you, or over there. And I'm talking about whatever connection they have to you. I want you to make sure that you understand that their bad behavior is not an excuse for your bad behavior or permission for your bad behavior. Right? There's a throne in heaven and it's occupied. There's a standard. If you're an alcoholic, the number one thing you have to recognize is there's a standard and it's not yours. That's the first step out. If you have any addiction, if you have any problem, the first thing to recognize is there's a standard in the world and it's not yours. Now, all these books are essentially the same, and they're all kind of like this book. Let's say this is any book in the library, not the Bible. There's a bunch of them, and they're all piled up, and they open these books, and they go, Dave McHugh, huh? Looks like on the 3rd of October, that one year, he did this stuff. But 31 years ago, he asked Jesus into his heart, so suddenly all this stuff has the word forgiven all over it in this book. And then, so there's all these books, and we're reading this book as a church, right? But I want you to recognize that that book does not sit on an equal plane with this book, even though biblos in Greek is a fancy word meaning book. That's what Bible means, right? It just means book, the book, ton hagios, the holy book. The Lamb's Book of books were opened, including the Lamb's Book of Life. Here's the good news stuff. You wanted the fire and brimstone and all this stuff. Here's the good news. And all the dead were judged according to what they had done and recorded in the books. The sea gave up its dead, and death and the grave gave up their dead. That's a fancy way of saying everybody that's ever lived on earth. Because you either died on the land or you died in the water. Because even if you die in the air, you come down in one of those other places, right? Because gravity wins. It's one of those things. Then death and the grave were thrown in the lake of fire, and the lake of fire is the second death. By the way, just 5 verses earlier, it describes the first resurrection. I talked about this 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, the first resurrection, the rest of the dead did not come back to life until the 1,000 years had ended. Blessed and holy are those who share in the first resurrection. For them, specific language, the second death has no power. Has no power. Have you ever figured that out? The second death has no power. You might actually die, but the second death has no power. Now, there's some debate over what the first resurrection and the second resurrection are, and the first death and the second death. But wouldn't it be nice if the second one had no power over you? You'd begin to think good things about life and maybe not worry about the second one, about the death so much. And anyone whose name was not found in the book of life was thrown into the lake of fire. I need to say this just a little bit, okay? Remember, we're talking in a book of images. Doesn't necessarily mean that our society has put up this lake of fire and all this stuff. Look, it's an image and all that. I'm I would love to debate you off on the side about whether or not there's an actual lake of fire or whether the river Styx is actually exists in Greek mythology or whatever it is. Three things. It's a good biblical reference, right? There's two things the Lord requires, three that he loves. Right? That's what we'll do. The first thing is, look, how you live matters. That's what this is saying. How you live actually matters. Why? Why does how you live matter? Because ethics of how you treat other people tells them what you believe. Because you actually live out of your beliefs. If you don't live out of your beliefs, you're not human. You live out of your beliefs. Now, your actual way you live is what you believe. Now, you might have some other happy thoughts about life, but you don't live out of those so that you don't believe them. So if you treat people bad, then you believe that it's okay to do that. And if you don't treat them bad, then you don't believe it's okay to do that. Ethics. Sincerity, right? Integrity matters. What is sincerity? Is a potter's language. Are there any pottery people in the room? Anybody love pottery? Do you know what sincerity actually means? Without wax. That's what it means. And so in the ancient world, they used to make pottery and sell pots to hold water. But if it broke, it would break. And they had a way that they could melt wax into the crack and hide the crack. And the pot was an insincere pot. It didn't hold water. That's what that means. Your faith and the way you live when they match is sincere or it's doesn't hold water. It's insincere. Your faith, right? So all your words that don't match your actions, look, it's all recorded. Here's the second thing. Right? Let's not forget about this, that if nobody else's behavior is an excuse or permission for you to do whatever the deepest, darkest desires of your heart and how to get ahead, they don't affect your permanent situation. Now, you might have to go through it with them, but it's a street witnessing thing that when I went out and started talking to people about Jesus, we thought our job was to take Jesus to them. But when we got there, we figured out that Jesus was taking us. And our whole response was between him and their responses between him. No matter what they do to you, it's not between you and them how you respond. So that's really back to the integrity or the sincerity issue, isn't it? Does your faith hold water? In the end, there's forgiveness. That's my final. I'm going to end right there. In the end, there's forgiveness because all the other books are opened and then the Lamb's book is opened and your name's in there. It's all good. It's like there's a stamp on all the stuff in your book that says forgiven. But your life matters. Your life matters. It matters so much that the throne is listening and watching and taking care to pay attention. But the wrath has already been poured out and taken care of too. Lord Jesus, help us live now for you. Help us believe and be transformed by what we believe to be your work in us. We ask that, and even then we say, come, come, Lord Jesus. Amen.